Hi, and welcome to Guideposts. I'm your volunteer reader, Sandy Summers. Today, we will continue reading the December-January 2025 issue of Guideposts with regular features like Someone Cares. Someone Cares, Pass It On. Silly Socks and Warm Fuzzies. In early 2020, when I was 14, my mom, Rochelle, and I visited a nursing home near our home in Stockton, California, for an arts and crafts event. Just a few weeks later, the COVID-19 pandemic hit, and I got worried about the residents. They couldn't have visitors or take part in most of their usual activities, and I knew they must be lonely and bored. I've always loved silly socks. I wear them when I golf, so my mom and I decided to drop off some fun, colorful socks and little notes of encouragement to nursing homes and assisted living facilities in our area. The residents love them, so we expanded our reach and set a goal to send them to seniors in all 50 states. We named the project Socks for Seniors. I learned that loneliness is a problem in nursing homes, and not just during a pandemic. We held fundraising events and formed partnerships with local businesses. At Christmas, we hold a big sock drive to reach even more seniors. So far, we've donated 4,500 pairs of socks to seniors in 45 states, and we plan to keep spreading the warm fuzzies for as long as we can. L. Gianelli, Stockton, California. An Advent of Kindness. Last December, my friend Sally shared the wonderful way she was brightening the Advent season for a friend who was undergoing chemotherapy. Each day of Advent, at about noon, she left a small surprise on her friend's porch. Soothing lavender soap, peppermint bark, a container of homemade soup, even an amaryllis plant. Her friend delighted in the little treats and felt so much better after receiving them. Sally had a ball wrapping the gifts, decorating them with festive bows and pom-poms, anything to make her friend smile. Sally inspired me so much that I started planning an Advent kindness calendar for a neighbor of mine who is struggling with health issues. I've made a list of small things I know she'll like: hot chocolate, popcorn balls, hand lotion, her favorite strawberry tarts. I can't wait to get started. Being kind is good medicine for both the giver and the receiver. Patricia Gallagher, Worcester, Pennsylvania. Fostering relationships. My parents adopted my oldest brother from a foster group when he was 15 and I was 6. My parents created a home full of love and grace, and it really gave me a passion for foster families that continues to this day. As an adult, I knew I wanted to play a helping part in the foster care system, but I wasn't sure exactly how. Then I heard about National Angels, an organization whose mission is to walk alongside children, youth, and families in the foster care community by offering consistent support through intentional giving, relationship building, and mentorship. The Angels Love Box program matches volunteers with foster families that they commit to serve at least once a month for a year. Volunteers find creative ways to support foster families, such as attending youth baseball games, helping with homework, or dropping off dinner or a care package. This gives the children in the home a greater sense of normalcy, and the support that foster parents receive increases placement stability, reducing the chance of kids in care moving from one home to home. A group of us started an Angels chapter in our town in 2019. We now serve more than 150 foster families in Tuscaloosa, and I'm amazed at what God has done. We see lasting bonds being forged, the children experiencing foster care get extra love, and the families get much-needed assistance and encouragement. If you'd like to get involved or start a chapter in your area, visit nationalangels.org. Kristen Reed, Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Have your own story of kindness and caring to tell? Email us at sc@guideposts.org. Cover story, Laughing Matter. What's so funny about being a divorced single mom facing middle age? Comedian Carrie Pomerelli lets us in on the joke. By Carrie Pomerelli, Fair Oaks, California. In front of my daughters, I tried to act as if everything was okay, as if I was okay. But as soon as I saw them off to school, I did what I'd been doing every day lately. I holed up in my bedroom and hid under my covers, binge-watching all 5 seasons of Friday Night Lights, drinking Coke, and eating a balanced diet of M&Ms and salt and vinegar potato chips. I'd become a member of a club I never wanted to join, the Single Moms Club. It was hard to believe that just 6 months earlier, my husband and I had been on a Christian marriage tour, doing stand-up comedy together in stadiums and appearing on magazine covers and TV shows as the funny couple of faith. But behind the scenes, we'd had some serious struggles. We fought and prayed and tried to make it work. Now, with two young girls to provide for, I was sure that no one in the church circle would hire me. No one would want to hear from a divorced woman. They'd probably think I didn't do enough or pray hard enough to save my marriage. Lord, you called me to do clean comedy, I thought, to minister to people by making them laugh. Now I'm totally disqualified for that. This wasn't how I thought my life would turn out. My career was over and I was turning gulp 40. My happy place was home with my family, my husband, and kids. That was shattered, and I didn't know how to pick up the pieces. And did I mention I had no other job skills? I think I came out of the womb performing. I was a real theater kid growing up in Detroit, the daughter of an Italian-American father and a Southern mom from Alabama. My parents supported me all the way, dance classes, community theater, auditions for commercial. I got my BFA in musical theater from University of Michigan and spent summers studying at the British American Drama Academy in London and the Stella Adler Conservatory in New York City. I discovered that at 5'2", I was too much of a shorty to be a Broadway dancer. I would have had a better shot at an acting career in Los Angeles because I looked so young. My parents, who moved to Atlanta by then, helped me load my stuff into the family minivan and drive cross-country to California. Right before they left, my dad drew me a map of L.A. with magic markers so I could get my bearings. I was so scared I cried. Then I went out and got three jobs because I'm a Gen Xer and extreme multitaskers. That's what we do. Everyone told me I had to lie about my age. Fortunately, even though I was 22, I could pass for 16. Maybe I could audition for Saved by the Bell. I found work on a soap operas, General Hospital, Port Charles, The Young and the Restless. Sometimes the roles were so small I didn't have many lines, and I'd have to tell my mom my character was mute. I got a few parts in movies and sitcoms. I graduated from the improv program at Second City, that's a big deal, and performed with a troupe on the main stage for a season. I joined a great church in L.A. The more my childhood faith deepened, the bigger the gulf seemed to grow between the roles my agent wanted me to audition for and the person God wanted me to be. I said no to so many opportunities. I would imagine my parents sitting in a theater watching me on screen. They got up and ran out. The part wasn't for me. As my 30th birthday approached, I worried that I'd missed my chance. I'd come to Hollywood with dreams of fame and fortune and marrying Matt Damon. I was still looking for the one role that would make me amazingly famous. One night, my agent emailed and told me I should reconsider doing a topless scene for a movie with a big star. If you do this, Carrie, your career will really be going places. Except those places weren't where I wanted to go. I plopped down on my bedroom floor and pulled out the Bible my parents had given me in first grade, the same one I had marked up with pink highlighting. I opened it to the book of Isaiah. It spoke of the rejection Jesus faced. Rejection, that's something I'm struggling actor could relate to. God, I don't know where I fit in anymore, I prayed. I just want to use my gifts for you. The word stand-up comedy popped into my head, an idea that had to have come from God. I liked making people laugh, but I never considered doing stand-up, ever. Write my own material, stand in front of an audience all alone with no one to play off of, as in improv, and hope my jokes landed? Terrifying. How can I reinvent myself now? I'm almost 30. As I needed to remind God of my age, I could almost hear him laughing. Carrie, I parted the Red Sea. You think I can't give you a career at 30? Buckle up, Buttercup. That's how I came to say yes to God and yes to stand-up. I took a stand-up comedy class and tried out my material at open mics. My jokes were all clean. Yet somehow, 3 months later, I was at my first gig standing in the narrow hallway of a world-famous Hollywood improv, waiting to go on. The walls were lined with glossy photos of iconic comedians I'd grown up watching. Steve Martin, Richard Pryor, Martin Short, Adam Sandler, All of them had performed on this stage, and here I was, number 23 in the lineup of 35 comics for the evening. I was petrified. Everyone who'd gone on before me had edgy material, dirty jokes. God, am I relatable? I wondered, pacing the hallway, will this audience even like me? Up next, Carrie Pomeroli. The next thing I knew, I was on stage, mic in hand. Hi, I'm an Italian Catholic dad. He raised me with good Italian Catholic values, guilt and intimidation. When the audience laughed, I knew I was hooked. Out of the whole lineup, I was the only one the manager asked to come back. One night I came back to the Hollywood Improv to showcase for some really big producers. There was a cute guy in the ticket booth who prayed for me. That was totally unexpected, but it really calmed my nerves. Within a year of my first gig, I was making a living as a stand-up comedian. I toured with headliners like Bone Hampton and Sherry Shepherd. Being as authentic on stage as I was off stage gave me opportunities to pray with and for other comics and for people I met at my shows, people who might never set foot in church. The more I said yes to God, the more doors open. I made 29 appearances on The Tonight Show doing sketch comedy. I wrote a book about my dating life and turned it into a feature film script. Who knew my ex-boyfriends would be such great material? Christian circles started inviting me to their churches to share my testimony. At that point, I didn't even know what a testimony was. I had no idea if I was worthy of sharing anything about faith, but God kept reminding me, I can use you. Remember that cute guy working at the Hollywood Improv who offered to pray for me? Turns out he was another comedian who loved Jesus. We got married, sorry, Matt Damon, and had two adorable daughters, Lucy and Ruby. We schlepped our kids all over the world touring. It was a crazy life, and I loved it. But things hadn't worked out as we planned. Life threw us some curveballs. Hiding under my covers, I was divorced and alone, feeling lost and broken. Hadn't I said yes to the plans God had for me? After 10 successful years as a stand-up, why was he disqualifying me? Was I no longer worthy of serving him? That's when I heard an answer deep in my soul. I never disqualified you. You're the one who bought that t-shirt. I love you. Then God got tougher with me. Get back to work, Carrie. You think I can't give you a career at 40? You have a whole new group of people who you can reach now. Buckle up, Buttercup. I threw back the covers and got up. When my daughters came home from school that day, I didn't have to try to act as if I was okay. For the first time since joining the Single Moms Club, I felt as if I would be okay. The first show where I talked about my divorce was a private event for women at a comedy club in Missouri. I paced backstage, as nervous as I'd been before my first gig at the Hollywood Improv. I stepped to the mic, took a deep breath, and opened with, "Well, I just went on an extreme diet. I lost 175 pounds. I got a divorce. I married for love the first time. Now I'm looking for a man with a pension who doesn't snore." The audience burst into laughter. After the show, women came up and hugged me. Some even said, "The fact that you can laugh through your pain gives me hope that I can make it through what I've been struggling with." I should have known God would use my brokenness for good. It's been a decade since I became a single mom. I was afraid the life I loved was over, but actually it's just different and better than I could have dreamed. I haven't had a date in 10 years, much to my mother's chagrin. Still, my life and heart are full. I travel a lot for gigs and bring my girls with me whenever I can. When they can't come along, my ex-husband stays with them. He still takes out my garbage and is the best dad. We're funny together at parent-teacher conferences and take great joy in embarrassing our daughters. Ruby, 13, wants to be a comedian and a baker in Paris. She walked on stage with me in front of 400 people and said, "My mom is single. She's looking for a man with a 401k. Having two comedians as parents means when I have a toothache, they say, chew on the other side." She killed it. Lucy, 16, wants to study aerospace engineering and serve in the U.S. military as a test pilot. She really likes math and physics. "Can't she just tell jokes like the rest of the family?" "Hey, Mom," she said as we were visiting colleges recently, "will you send me care packages with homemade cookies?" "No need," I told her. "We'll be roommates." Much as I love ministering to people at comedy shows, I love coming home to my happy place. You'll still find me under the covers eating M&Ms and drinking Coke Zero, only these days I'm snuggled with my daughters watching British TV shows. I am truly content. I just celebrated 20 years as a stand-up comedian and another birthday with a zero after it. I've appeared on Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hollywood red carpets, and I have a new dry bar comedy special. I've written film scripts for the Hallmark Channel and authored 5 more books. God is still opening doors that blow my mind. He is my agent. When he says go, I just pack a bag and say yes. I'm sure he's having a good laugh about that. For more on this story, I'm Sandy Summers, and you're listening to Guideposts on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you missed any part of this program, you may access it anytime on demand at www.sunsounds.org. In addition to the bi-monthly magazine, each week we may be reading some of Guideposts' other daily devotions or inspiring stories from Guideposts Online. Today we will be reading some other stories from The Joy of Christmas, Guideposts 2021. The Joy of Pets, Puppy in the Box. My kids were getting older. Was there any way to reclaim the magic of Christmas? By Sarah Miller, Ridgefield, Connecticut. Late Christmas Eve, my two children were fast asleep. Even my husband, Evan, had turned in nearly an hour before. But I was still downstairs arranging and rearranging the packages under the tree. No matter how I stacked them, I couldn't get them the way I wanted them. When the kids were small, Christmas Eve was filled with so much anticipation. I couldn't wait to see the excitement in their faces the next morning as they tore through the wrapping paper to see what Santa had left them. But now they were growing up. It seemed nothing amazed them anymore. So this year I had arranged for a really big surprise, a surprise I now worried wasn't such a good idea. Lord, I wondered, have I made a terrible mistake? I glanced at the sugar cookies, the glass of milk, and the carrots that we always left on the table for St. Nick and his squad. I remembered all the Christmas mornings Aaron and Audra had taken the missing treats as absolute proof Santa had visited. Now the kids played along with the cookie game more out of tradition than belief. Long gone were the days when Lego sets and baby dolls set off shrieks of joy, and the story of Jesus' birth was still new and suspenseful to them. Was that why I decided to surprise them with a puppy this year? Was it just me wanting to recapture that excitement? All I knew was our new dog would be here in a few hours. I hoped it would bring some of that old magic with it. I had forgotten the idea of getting a dog on the first day of school. I just put Audra on the bus when a woman came by walking a Sheltie. "What a beautiful dog," I said. "Thanks," she replied. Then her voice lowered, like she was letting me in on a secret. "She's having puppies in a couple months. Would you like one?" "I'd love one," I said. The words flew out of my mouth, then I hesitated, but I better check with my husband first. "I hope you told her no," Evan said that evening when I told him. "We don't have the room or the money for a dog." I knew he was right. We already had a cat and 2 guinea pigs, but still. "Can't you just see the kids getting a puppy for Christmas?" I said. The puppies were born in early November. I went over to see them one morning right after I got the kids off to school. Then in a small pen was a mother dog nursing her 6 tiny little things. They looked more like rats than dogs, but they were beautiful all the same. "Would you like to hold one?" the breeder asked. How could I say no? I held a squirming ball of fur against my face, and the puppy stole a kiss. I felt a tingle all over, like when the kids rushed down to their presents. "You would be the best Christmas present ever," I said as I returned him to his pen. In early December, I took Evan to see the puppies, and he gave in to my pleas. But now I was having misgiving. The kids are growing up, I thought as I headed up to bed. I can't turn back the clock, and a dog isn't going to bring back the old magic. It seemed forever before I drifted to sleep. I awoke to shrieks of "Merry Christmas." Audra climbed under the covers next to me. Aaron pushed in beside Evan. "Can we open the presents?" they shouted. The kids were in their Christmas jammies. Evan and I got out our robes. I made coffee and we headed down to the family room and the tree. Audra's eyes went from the presents to half-eaten cookies. "He was here all right, Mommy," she said. "Yes, dear," I said. Maybe Audra was humoring me, but she was still a great kid. Lord, I should be grateful for the blessings you give me, I thought, and handed Aaron a present. Aaron unwrapped the bowling ball and shoes we'd gotten him. He joined a league that fall. Cool, he said. It's blue, just like I wanted. Thanks, Mom and Dad. Audra was ripping the paper off her Barbie beetle when there was a knock on the door. My heart skipped a beat. It was my big Christmas surprise. Suddenly, I felt silly. Did the kids want a puppy? Who could that be? I managed to get out. Stay here and I'll go check. I ran up the stairs, opened the front door. Merry Christmas, the breeder said, and good luck. I put the puppy inside a big box I'd wrapped in green and red paper, then put the lid on top. Immediately, he started whimpering. Maybe I shouldn't bother with the package, I thought. But since I'd already gone to the trouble, shh, I whispered. It's only for a moment. Kids, come look, I cried out. Santa just left another press. They were there before I could get the words out of my mouth. Evan right behind them. The lid inched upward on the box, and I gently held it in place. What is it? Audra gasped. She was so excited she was shaking. I don't know, I said. Let's find out. Ever so slowly, Audra lifted the lid. It's a puppy, she screamed. The little dog barked. Audra snatched him out of the box and held him tight against her chest. He licked her face. Audra squealed. What do you think we should name him? I asked. He has a bit of reddish brown on his nose, Aaron said, reaching over to Audra's to pet the little guy's head. His eyes were shining. I think we should call him Rusty. I looked over at Evan, but he only had eyes for the puppy, and he'd known about the surprise all along. That's when I realized I was grinning too, grinning from ear to ear like a kid on. This is the best Christmas ever, Audra said. I agreed. Thank you, Lord. I thought the years of magical Christmas mornings were over. All it took to bring them back was one small puppy. Turns out you're never too old to believe in the magic of Christmas. The joy of caregiving, fatherhood. Joseph might not have a big part in the church Christmas pageant, but his role is the one I identify with the most, by Rick Hamlin, contributing editor. By the time Christmas comes this year, both of my sons will have had their first child, and I will be a granddad. Maybe that's why I find myself thinking of that biblical father who appears in the creche, often cast in the background, bearded, holding a staff, Joseph, who was given the challenge and gift of raising God's only son. What do we know of Joseph? He was a carpenter, Jesus being rather scornfully referred to as the carpenter's son. Not the poorest of the poor, but definitely toward the bottom of the social scale. That Joseph didn't have a lot of money is apparent from Scripture. When he and Mary take their newborn to the temple in Jerusalem for dedication, they offer as a sacrifice a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. The province of those two turtle doves we encounter as we sing on the first day of Christmas, My True Love Gave to Me. A person of means would have offered a lamb, as prescribed by law. Turtle doves were a second choice, but it is also clear that Joseph is faithful and observant. More than that, he listens to God, even in extreme circumstances. Much is made of the angel who appeared to Mary and told her of the miraculous birth, a perennial scene in the Christmas pageant. But what are the four dreams that come to Joseph? They too involve an angel. Joseph had his first dream just after he learns that Mary, his betrothed, is with child. He plans to quietly break things off with her until an angel appears to him in a dream and lets him know whose child that is, what the child should be named, and the role the child will play in fulfilling God's promise to all of us. Can you imagine having a dream like that? Mind-boggling. It would be tempting enough to question the dream's validity, if not dismiss it altogether. Joseph didn't do that either. He followed the angel's instructions, taking Mary as his wife and refraining from any marital relations with her until Jesus was born. Note how frank the Bible is about these seemingly private matters. The second dream alerts Joseph to Herod's wrath. The newborn babe will be slaughtered unless Joseph acts decisively. He does, fleeing with his wife and child to Egypt. There they wait in safety until Joseph has a third dream. Herod is dead and the coast is clear. In one final dream, Joseph is warned that Herod's son, almost as bad as the father, is now king. To avoid him, the Holy Family heads to Nazareth in Galilee. The last glimpse we get of Joseph in Scripture, a sidelong view, is when Jesus is 12 years old, accompanying his parents on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem for the Passover. On this visit, their adolescent son goes missing among the throngs of Jews who have journeyed to the temple for this pilgrimage holiday. While searching for his son, Joseph might have recalled the prophecies both Simeon and Anna had given here at the infant's dedication, prophecies that echoed what Joseph knew from his own dreams. After 3 days, his parents find Jesus listening, learning, amazing all the teachers at the temple. Mary chides her son. "Your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety. Did you not know that I must be at my father's house? Jesus replied. I imagine Joseph, the earthly father, would have felt only love for that truth. What are the lessons I take from all this? Things I learned from being a father myself. That you give your children all that you have and know. That guidance in raising them will come from places you might never expect. Earthly angels as well as heavenly ones. That who they become will continue to surprise and delight you. At some point, you will have to let them go as they follow the path God has set out for them. I have no doubt my sons will be great dads, and if they kindly claim they learned something of this loving role from me, I have to insist I had help, big help along the way, much like Joseph did." Read more from Rick on his prayer blog at guidepost.org/Rick Hamlin, Hamlin. That's all the time we have today for Guideposts. Thank you for listening. My name is Sandy Summers. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.